All right, welcome to the second session in the map rendering vector block, I guess. I'm going to talk about rendering maps with OpenGL and the road that led us there. So basically, at Mapbox, we want to render maps on as many different devices as possible. So that's why we're still using raster tiles, because they're very compatible. You can show them on all devices. But this is only getting us so far. We want to do a lot more with maps. So we started to look at how maps are rendered. Basically, there's two ways. You can either use the CPU or the GPU that is built into the devices you have. When you use CPU-based rendering, like Mapnik or HTML5 Canvas or even SVG, this tends to look very different from GPU-based rendering in that rendering on the CPU allows you to do a lot of cool effects, like very high fidelity stuff that you can do as easily with OpenGL or WebGL. But obviously, drawing on the GPU is a lot faster, especially if you want to have fast updating maps, if you want to have seamless zoom, if you want to rotate the map. So let's look at ACK first. ACK is the renderer that is used by Mapnik to draw the actual lines and polygons. It is very high visual fidelity in that the line drawings look very accurate. It's also very mature, but it's CPU-based, and so is Canvas. I tried implementing a map renderer in Canvas, and it actually works. But panning around is sort of slow, and it's also single-threaded, so this means it blocks the browser UI. So this is not really the solution that we're looking for. We could also use SVG. And Dane Springmeier, among others, did a demonstration of that, and it actually works. You can pan around and zoom in, and it automatically works on retina displays and everything. But it's still very slow. So you might know this from using ID. ID is a fantastic piece of software, but on some older machines, it's very, very slow, especially on some browsers that don't have optimized SVG rendering. So let's look at OpenGL. OpenGL is a low-level graphics API that is developed by the Kronos Group and is actually supported by a lot of different vendors. Pretty much all of the major software vendors and hardware vendors support OpenGL. Microsoft is not really on board there because they do their own DirectX stuff, but almost all other platforms, especially embedded platforms like mobile devices, use OpenGL. And it's also starting to move into the web. So at this point, you can start using WebGL. It's supported in all browsers, and Safari just added support for that with the next release that is due to ship in September, probably. There's a few disadvantages to using OpenGL, though. So you can't immediately switch your entire map rendering to OpenGL because it's often disabled on slow machines. However, it has a lot of advantages in that you have access to the native hardware acceleration that is on the machine, that is on the mobile device, and you basically have pixel-level control, so you can exactly decide how the map looks. And there's a couple of existing rendering engines that use OpenGL to draw maps, most notably Google Maps, but there's also a couple of others that do this, like Open Science Map in particular, and a few others that you can use today, including Mapbox.gl, which we released last week. But let's take a step back here and look at what actually is a map. A map consists of a few different drawing primitives, if you will, and I chose these four because these are basically everything you need to draw a map. And they are lines, but you also need a couple of other things like polygons to draw buildings and parks, and you also want to draw icons for points of interest, and you also want to draw text so that you actually know what street you're on. So I want to focus on two different things, the first one and the last one. So I'm going to talk a bit about rendering lines with OpenGL and about rendering text with OpenGL. All right, when you look at lines, these seem actually fairly simple. Probably you can just draw lines. And if you look at the OpenGL specification and at the manual, there's a command that is called glines, and it draws lines. But they look like this. They're not anti-aliased. They don't have any meter joins. They basically just don't look very good. You can't draw lines that have a non-integer width on many devices. And also, there's a hardware limit on some devices. For example, on my machine, I can't draw lines that are wider than 10 pixels. All right, so how are we going to do this then? We can't really use the GL lines for our purposes because lines are one of the most important features on maps. So we want our lines to look good, right? So basically the way you do this is you draw lines as polygons. This is also the way Mapnik does this, by the way. So you look at the line, you look at how wide you want to draw the line, and then you create polygons, triangles in this case, that basically make up the entire line. So this also allows you to basically determine how the line should look. You can draw all sorts of different joints, like round joints or bevel joints, and sort of replicate all of that, all of the styles that you also know from Mapnik. However, you have to do all of this yourself. So you have to look at the style sheet and basically create geometry for the various different joints. I also published a blog post that goes a lot more into detail about this, and you can read this on our blog on mapbox.com. So next up, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about this, is text rendering. Text rendering is also a very important feature or a very important part of maps, and it's actually separated into three different things. When you talk about text rendering, you first have to figure out how to actually draw glyphs onto the map, like how do you technically achieve this. The second thing is what glyphs you actually are going to draw. For example, for languages like Arabic, you have to figure out what position all of the glyphs are, how you're going to do context-sensitive replacements, and so on. I'm going to come back to this. And the last thing is, where are you going to draw those labels? Talking about label placement. So let's look at all of the requirements that we need to do when actually drawing text. So first off, we want to draw text in very different sizes. Like as you zoom into the map, you want to have either like smaller labels or larger labels depending on the zoom level. You want to have text that is arbitrarily rotated. This is especially important if you want to label roads, because it doesn't look good if you have horizontal labels only. And also a very distinct feature that you'll need in maps are text halos, because they make the labels a lot more readable, because usually maps are very busy. There's a lot of roads underneath, so you want to have like this nice halo effect so they can actually read the label. If you look around what people are using to draw text, then you'll probably find FreeType very quickly. FreeType is an open source library that is used by many like different types of software, including on iOS. And it's a library that allows you to create glyph images from a font. So you basically say it, oh, I want this glyph, and give me a pixel, a bitmap representation of it, and that's what you get. So you get a bitmap representation of the glyph, and then you have to copy it to the correct place, pixel by pixel. This is essentially how FreeType works, and you have to repeat this for every letter. However, when drawing maps, you also want to rotate the map. So basically, for every frame, when you rotate the map, you have to repeat this process over and over again, and you can't really reuse all of the glyphs because the glyphs are slightly more rotated, so FreeType has to go back and draw the entire glyph over and over again, pixel by pixel, and then you have to copy it back over pixel by pixel, so this is not going to work for us. So I looked around a bit and I found this paper from Valve Software talking about alpha-tested magnification, and the thing they use is called a signed distance field. So instead of having a bitmap of the font, we have a signed distance field of the glyph. And this looks like this. It looks pretty blurry, but it's not actually a blurred glyph. What this is if you go here, it's a metric for the distance from the outline. So basically, the color of the pixels, if you go back here, is the distance to the outline of the glyph. And it's negative, or whatever you choose, when you're inside the glyph, and it's positive when you're outside the glyph. So basically what this allows you to do is use the OpenGL, the graphics hardware, to scale this up for you. So you typically have like a small image, this is a scale up version of the image, and then scale this up using the linear interpolation that is for free on graphics hardware. And then you're saying, oh, all of the pixels that are larger than zero are white, and all of the pixels that are smaller than zero are black, if you want to draw black text. And then you add some sort of like fuzzy outline, like some sort of feathering, so that you get nice anti-alias text. And the interesting part about this is that it produces very high quality text. In any rotation, you basically just have two triangles per letter. So all of the things you can draw in OpenGL are triangles. So you, for a rectangle, like a glyph, you need two triangles. And then the OpenGL hardware does all of the rest for you. So you don't have to like render every glyph separately with FreeType, copy it back to the GPU and render it. It does all of that for you. So what we're using is called a texture atlas, and it looks like this. So you just have a giant texture that you're using to draw your text, and you have all sorts of different glyphs, all of the glyphs that you might want to use on your map in the texture atlas, and then you pick and choose what glyphs you want to copy at what position on the map. All right. And let's go to text shaping. So when I started with this, I thought, it can't be that hard to draw text, but it actually is, because what text shaping means is that when you look at the Unicode character that is stored in the OpenStreetMap tags, and you want to find a font glyph for that, it doesn't work that way. So there's no one-to-one mapping between Unicode characters and font glyphs. As an example, look at this. It says Sophos in Greek. And the first letter and the last letter are the exact same letters. So when you write Unicode, those are the same Unicode code points you type. Except when the Unicode code point is displayed as the last character in a word, you use a different symbol to visualize it. This is called context-dependent shaping, and a lot of different languages have this as well. For example, when you don't do any shaping for Arabic text, it looks like this is completely illegible. I don't read any Arabic, so it's completely illegible for me anyway. But basically what you see here is the Unicode code points from left to right. However, a property of Arabic means that if a glyph is at a different position within the word, it is replaced by various different symbols. And this is to achieve the joint writing that you see here. Another thing that you also see here is the text direction. So basically when you write the text, you write it from left to right. Rather, not left to right, but you write the first symbol, then the second symbol, then the third symbol, and that is how it's stored in the map or in the feature properties. However, when you display it, you actually have to display it in reverse, because Arabic is a language that you write right to left. However, this is not the end of the story here either. If you look at text like this, you encounter that many labels actually have more than one writing direction. So you can't say, oh, all of this text is written either left to right or right to left. Oftentimes, you'll have text with other writing direction embedded into the text. For example, like here, you have the numerals written as left to right, but the rest of the text is written right to left. It doesn't end here, though. Some languages, and I forgot which language this is, I'm sorry, have also stacked diacritic symbols. This means if you look at the top example, you see there's like the third and the fourth are diacritic symbols that are meant to modify the previous letter. But when you apply a naive approach and render them on top of each other, you can't really read them anymore. So what you have to do is, you have to look at the second letter and see, oh, there's a third letter that is a diacritic sign that modifies the second letter, and then there's another diacritic sign that modifies the second letter as well, and then choose the appropriate glyph from the font, like in the example at the very bottom, to have both of these diacritic signs displayed. So, what are we going to do? I obviously don't know all of these languages, right? However, there's a library called HarfBus that does this for us, and it's heavily supported by Google, and it's an open source library, and basically what you do is you tell it, here's the text, here's the Unicode code points that I want to shape, and here are the various fonts that I want to use to display this text. So what the HarfBus software does is it goes in and looks at the text and chooses the correct glyphs from the appropriate fonts and tells you the exact position you have to position these glyphs at. So basically it tells you, oh, put A at position X and Y and put this glyph at position X and Y and so on. And then you end up with like correctly laid out text. The third property, or the third part of of text rendering, is label placement. We've seen so far how we can actually technically render text. We've seen what else we have to do to display the correct glyphs, and now we have to find out where we have to display all of those labels. And when you look at Mapnik, basically the way this works there is you try to place a label if there's no label there yet, which is render the label there, and mark this place as having a label. So the next label that we want to render basically collides with the previous label and is not getting rendered. This is a very naive approach to label placement, but it works sort of well for Mapnik. However, when we're rendering maps with OpenGL that have a seamless zoom, this is not going to work, because we don't want to have pops in our labels. So basically what this means is, if you zoom in into the map label should always stay there, and it should not vanish and then appear again and then vanish and appear again. So it's like you don't want to have any flickering when you zoom around the map. You also don't want chumps. And this means that the label position shouldn't change. For example, when you draw labels with Mapnik, you typically say, oh, you can place this label either below or above the feature, for example, for city names. However, you don't want situations where when you zoom in, the label is at the bottom, then flips to the top, and then jumps back to the bottom. You want to have a consistent label appearance. And you also don't want to have this based on the history of the navigation. For example, you want to have don't want to have the situation where, based on the navigation history of the user, like how the user panned to a particular position, the map looks different, right? Because like if you send a link to someone else and he's not going to see the same labels as you, and it's very hard to debug if you base this on the history So we're looking at a paper from Beam, Deitches, and Yap, which has the idea of using three-dimensional cones to display labels. So we basically have a like three-dimensional art tree, and then place the first label and have it as a cone, and then we basically downsize all of the other cones, meaning that they will start appearing at a deeper zoom level. So when you zoom in, the label size stays the same, but obviously there's more space around because you zoomed in. So all of the features are further apart visually. And then you can start showing the labels at a particular zoom level. So all of this is pre-computed, so we don't have to do any runtime labeling, which is very costly. I know this is a lot of content that you've seen so far, and basically the idea I wanted to convey is that when you start rendering maps, you first think, oh, look at the map. It's not that hard to render. You just have a bunch of polygons, a bunch of lines, and a couple of text. But there's a lot of things that surprised me when I started writing the map render, things that I like didn't realize when I started the project. And I think it's very interesting to see that the complexity that is behind rendering maps, especially if they are interactive. And lastly, I want to show you a quick demo of the map render that you see here. So this is the Mapbox.gl render that you can download. It's open source, and you can pan around, you can zoom in, and you see the Mensa here, and you can also rotate the map. All right. And all of this is open source. This is the C++ version that you're seeing here, but we're also going to release a JavaScript-based version that runs in the browser with WebGL. And we're looking forward to your contributions. So go to GitHub, download it, try it out. Compile it on your device for iOS, and tell us what you think. All right, thanks.
Thanks, Constantine. Any questions?
I was interested that you briefly mentioned halos as part of the text rendering stuff. One of the, I think, the challenges of web cartography is that print stuff before about 5 years ago never used the sort of all surprising halos that we see at the moment. You know, at the moment, if you see a halo on a web map, it goes all around the text. Traditionally, what you do in print cartography is you just knock out the bits that are going to conflict. So, for example, if you had a white halo, then that would remove any contours that you got in the background. Whereas on a printed map, you'd still be able to see the contours, but you just take a little chunk out of any black lines that were below. Is that something that this approach enables? Because I know historically it's been pretty much impossible to do with MapNIC.
So it's historically been impossible to do with MapNIC because it wasn't implemented.
Yeah.
Technically, it's possible to implement this in MapNIC as well as in OpenGL. So what you have to do here is you have to separate all of the layers that you draw and then just knock out particular layers. For example, you don't want to knock out the background layer or, for example, the park layer that is just like a green polygon. But you do want to knock out roads, for example, or other labels in case you place it on top of another label. So you'd have to render all of the layers separately into separate color buffers, and this just takes up a lot of memory. So you can technically do it, but it's just too slow, probably, or you'd have to do a lot of optimizing around that.
Okay. Wait for Moore's Law to make things a bit easier in a few years.
Yeah.
I've got several questions, but I'll just stick to one for now. The pyramidal label placement scheme, very clever. How does it work when you rotate? Do you have to pre-calculate it for lots of different rotations and choose the best one?
This is a very good question. And we also looked at this another paper by Martin Nollenberg and a few colleagues. He's actually here at KIT in Karlsruhe. And basically, the paper describes how the label placement works for rotation. Basically, the way they do this is they calculate rotation ranges. So they have one range where the label is visible and another range where it's invisible because it would collide with another label. And then you just show the label in one of the ranges. So they sort of simplify this a little by only having two rotation ranges, but you can look at the paper for more details. There's also a blog post by my colleague Ansis on the Mapbox blog that appeared yesterday. So you can also go there and learn more about the label placement on the Mapbox blog.
That's
mapbox.com.
I believe we would have time for one more.
I compiled and installed the viewer, and it works great. But when I was doing that, I noticed that the style sheets bear no resemblance to the Mapnik style sheets that we're used to. Do you want to give a brief overview of what drove that?
So we decided not to use the Mapnik style sheets because a lot of the concepts in OpenGL and in the Mapbox GL renderer are different from the concepts that you see in Mapnik. Technically, you could write a conversion script that converts existing Cardo CSS or Mapnik XML styles to the new style sheet format. However, this is probably not the most efficient use of the render, and it's probably going to be slower than if you write it with the concepts the GL renderer has in mind. That being said, the current style sheet format that you see being used in the Mapbox GL renderer is not final, and we're working on revising this to be a lot different.
Thanks. Can do one more.
Hey, about all the pre-computed stuff, how are you going to transfer this to the application?
Are you talking about transferring it to the GPU?
No, especially when we are talking about the web application, what you are planning to do. So you have lots of pre-calculated stuff like lift positioning, etc., and you need to transfer this to the web application as well. How are you going to do this?
We're not sure yet. We have one version running that does all of the text shaping, like the glyph position stuff, on the server. So basically, when you load a vector tile, you not only have the positions of all of the geometry, but you also have the glyph position stored in the vector tile. Obviously, this is not very flexible. For example, you can't do generated text like adding an M behind the elevation with that system, because you'd have to go back to the server and ask it for it to calculate the position. Another way we could do this is by compiling Harfbus to JavaScript and use that on the client. And we also have a version that sort of does that. It loads the actual OpenType fonts and then uses a library called OpenType.js to extract all of the glyph information and generate all the glyph images on the device or in JavaScript. But the Mapbox GL renderer doesn't do the complex text shaping that you've seen so far. For example, it doesn't really work with the Arabic text that you've seen here. It just like looks horribly right now. But we're working on that.
Okay,
all right, thanks everyone.
Thanks.